In the Old Testament, it's talked at various times that children were invited into the praise and worship and the celebration, in fact, the remembrance of God's promises, especially during Passover. And so sometimes it used the oldest son, typically, of the family. Sometimes it was the youngest of the family that got to do it. But throughout that time, even Joel himself, the prophet, said, "I will pour out my spirit, young and old will experience it." So this morning, I'm very excited to welcome a person who was baptized last year into our church community, Connor Yule, up to come and share with us our scripture, and he's going to read for us. So please encourage Connor as he's coming up.
Jesus said, "The kingdom of heaven is like a king who planned a great wedding banquet for his son and sent out his servants to invite many guests. When they got the invitation, some began to make excuses. One said, 'I have just bought a field and I must go and see it. Please excuse me.' And other said, 'I have just bought 5 yoke of oxen and I'm on my way to try them out. Please excuse me.' Still another said, 'I just got married, so I can't come.' They rejected the king's servants and went off, one to his field and other to his business. Others seized the servants, mistreated them, and killed them. When the king heard about it, he was enraged. He sent his army to deal with those who had attacked his servants. When the wedding banquet was ready, he sent his servants to tell those who had been invited, 'Come to the wedding banquet, for everything is now ready.' But the ones invited refused to come. Then the king became angry and ordered his servants, 'Go out quickly into the streets and alleys of the town and bring in the poor, the crippled, the blind, and the lame. Invite anyone you find. Go out to the roads and country lanes and compel them to come in so that my house will be full.' So the servants went out into the streets and gathered all the people they could find, the bad as well as the good, and the wedding hall was filled with guests."
It's awesome to come before the King of the universe and to express our thoughts and prayers. It lifts our hearts. So in that theme, I wanted to continue to ask, well, do you want to continue to have some fun this morning? I know after the last 2 weeks, you're maybe a little cautious of what, when I say, do you want to have fun? You then say, I'm not sure. But this morning, I thought that we could have a little fun and play some dodgeball. But you know that as I reflect on various games that we play, I don't just want to use, you know, just play any form of dodgeball that we typically play. I want to make it a little bit more interesting. So I brought my dodgeball backpack with all the things in it that I like in terms of playing dodgeball. And so I thought maybe this morning we could have some fun. So maybe we could play some football dodgeball. Anybody want to play some football? It's a little harder to catch it and a little harder when it hits you, but they don't want to play football dodgeball. Okay. We could play regular dodgeball. That'd be kind of fun, but you've probably played dodgeball before this way, so maybe not this one, but there's some other options too. We could play tennis dodgeball with rackets. But you'd have to catch it as well, too. So that probably maybe wouldn't work so well. We could play, what's this doing in here, a wrench? How about, what else we got here? How about baseball dodgeball? Wait, whoops. Now this baseball is wet, because I found it in my backyard yesterday. This baseball is wet. It has signatures on it from people that were all part of baseball camp. So it'd be kind of like a traditional sort of dodgeball game, right? Do you want to play this? I think Allison's name is probably on here. Steven's name is on here, I see. We all signed it for baseball camp, so we could play baseball dodgeball. No. Okay. Well, we could use some of the rocks that Janet has. Rock dodgeball. Well, this is a little better. So that wouldn't be too bad, but... Then again, you can hold on to that, Bruce. Or softball. Well, we said no baseball, so maybe not that. We could also play, this is the one that I like to play the best.
golf ball dodgeball. How about that? No, not golf ball dodgeball. Not safe. Well, the kids are gone. So we can't play that. Okay, well, at the end, I'll let you think about that. Because at the end of my inspiration today, and don't leave, you can't leave. I see who you are, so you can't leave. We're going to play a game of dodgeball, okay? We're going to invite the kids back in, and we'll play a little game of dodgeball, and we'll have to think which ball we want to use with the kids. And maybe you should, if there's a golf ball near you, just hold on to that so the kids don't grab it when they come back in. But we'll decide which ball we're going to play with in our dodgeball game, okay? Because the Nerf ball. Yeah, this is kind of nerfy, but we should have brought a Nerf ball. That would have been good. We'll decide which ball we're going to use for our dodgeball game. I wanted to introduce that because you're playing dodgeball right now. You are. It's life, but you're playing a dodgeball in life. In fact, you're playing dodgeball on God's vineyard. You are. You're playing dodgeball on God's vineyard. And in this dodgeball game that we play in God's beautiful vineyard that we play, there's some fascinating dynamics of how we play it. Because every day, and if you'll recall, in a dodgeball game, when we play dodgeball, the challenge in dodgeball, help me out here, guys, you have two teams. And you line up the balls in the middle of the room. So you have to remember this for a little later. You line up the balls. Hey, we could use all the balls together. That's what we could do. You line up the balls in the middle of the room. You get two teams and you go to the extreme sides. And then someone blows a whistle or you say go, and you run towards and try to take possession of a ball. When you've got that ball, you stay on your side, the other team stays on their side, and you then take the ball and start to watch where other people are and throw it to hit the person, right? And if you hit the person and it then falls to the ground, they're out. If they catch the ball, they then can do the same thing to players on the other side, right? Catching, throwing, getting hit by a dodgeball. Am I missing anything? That's how you play dodgeball or wrench ball, right? That's how you play, or dodge wrench, I guess, according to the movie. This game that we play, you're doing it in life right now. You did it this week. You're in the process of doing this right now. But as we consider this, first I want to go to the parable that Connor told us. You're playing dodgeball. As you play dodgeball in life, when Jesus told the parable of the wedding banquet, he was introducing the dynamic of dodgeball. Maybe he wouldn't have said that, but today we can think about that in those terms. It's kind of a parallel in understanding. And when Connor read this for us, to just summarize it, a king was having a great banquet for his son, his only son. He was having a great banquet for his son, and he sent his servants out to invite people to come to the great banquet, to send out invitations. And we can see in the parable that some of them said, hey, I just got a new business. I want to see how it runs. Another one said, hey, I got some new things that I'm using that I want to try out. Some oxen at that time. I know none of you probably say, oh, well, I went and bought some oxen this year, this week, so I'm not going to church. But maybe new motorcycle. Maybe new boat. Maybe new Xbox game. A new thing that you want to try out. Another one said, well, I'm in love. I'm just getting married, so I can't come to your banquet. The banquet, actually, interesting in this story, the banquet wasn't pending, wasn't immediate. They were just being invited. Because we see in the parable, and the parable is actually told twice. Jesus tells this parable twice in the course of 3 years. So we see this parable twice, but the latest time that he told this parable was after Palm Sunday, after he went into the city of Jerusalem as the king's son, okay? He's going to Jerusalem as the king's son, and then he tells these stories. He tells these stories to a lot of religious people that were in the temple at that day, but all kinds of people, as we talked about last week, 9 different groups represented that he told this story to. He tells a story and says that there are people that say, no, I'm too busy with other things. I've bought some nice stuff that I really like, and I'm in relationship with others that keeps me from going to your banquet. But worse than that, some of the servants were attacked and abused and killed. Imagine, someone shows up to you, hands to you an invitation, and you beat them up and kill them. That's nasty. When the wedding banquet was ready, it says, he sent his servants to say, it's all set. Are you coming? We don't know from the story whether Jesus was having the servants ask the same people or different people, but still people refused to come. And the king became angry and said, go out everywhere. Go out into the streets and alleys of the town. You can see how there's a concentric extension of what he's saying. Go into the streets and alleys of the town beyond my own community. Invite anybody who will come. Bring in the poor and the crippled and the lame. Invite anyone. Go into the roads and country lanes and compel them to come in because I want to have a full house. So the servants went out and gathered people, and they came in. I want to put this in a little bit more context. So we have this situation, but let me just back up a little bit and say this. God is the king. Jesus is his son. You're invited. Regardless of where you see yourself in this story, because you are in that story, in the story, one of the powerful things that Jesus did like no other at any time, at any place, when he told a story, he included all of humanity. He's doing that here. As he tells this story, he says, invite everyone, invite the poor and the lame, people he didn't even know, his son didn't even know, invite them to the wedding ceremony, the bad, the good, as Connor read from us. Invite them, even from the country lanes. Like even invite the guy that lives near Wyoming, out on a farm. Invite that guy. Invite people to come in, because I want a full house. If we're playing dodgeball, what's the ball? Well, in the context of this story, there's 3 balls that are thrown to you. For you to avoid, for you to catch, for you to throw. Number one, God's invitation. Are you dodging it or catching it? Number two, the other ball that God is, the other ball that's being thrown toward you is opportunities that you have in life. Because you've taken your first breath as a child, you have opportunities presented to you in life. Pleasing for God, for you to catch, inviting others, getting ready for the wedding. Opportunities like being part of a family, having money, wealth, achievements that would tempt you to say that's more important than going. The second ball that's being thrown towards you is the temptations in life to do something other than worship God. Here's the problem. When you have those things in life that become more important than God, that's idolatry. That's them being God. They'll never be God. That's the problem. But in this context, people are getting invited to the ceremony and they're saying, no, I'm too busy being married. My wife is most important in my life. She's a goddess. I adore her. That's idolatry. If your marriage is more important than your relationship with God, you've got a problem. The third thing, the third ball that's thrown, is what you're doing with life and time and wealth, doing good or doing bad until the kingdom comes. We'll look about that here in a little bit, but let me go on. Jesus puts this parable in context. He continues to talk. What does he say? He continues to tell the parable, and he says, when the king came in to see the guests, he noticed a man there who was not wearing wedding clothes. Uh-oh. Just walked in off the street. He asked, how did you get in here without wedding clothes, friend? The man was speechless. The king told the attendants, tie him hand and foot and throw him outside. Into the darkness there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth, for many are invited, but few are chosen. Ouch. What is he talking about? In the context of what's happened in the parable, clearly all kinds of people are invited. So it's not as if the king invites 4 people to the wedding or 26 people to the wedding. Let's just have a small affair. No, the parable says he invites people from all over the world. When you put it in context, why does Jesus say this? Well, it goes back to what a wedding's all about. Number one, when you go to a wedding, you wear wedding clothes because you respect what's going on. Jesus is speaking before his death on the cross, but theology tells us, the rest of the Bible tells us, your wedding clothes are Christ's righteousness for you. See, you can't get into the wedding and say, I've done all these wonderful things. I'm a good person. I can impress you with the righteous clothes I have, because God says none of our righteous deeds are worthy of being righteous before him. You got to be wearing the right clothes. What's the right clothes? Christ's sacrifice for you. He paid for your clothes. They're waiting for you at the door, but you got to put them on. Because if you try to show up at the wedding and say, hey, Ken Park has done some pretty important things in life, you know what God's going to say? Get out. It's not about you. You don't have enough. Then Jesus continues and says, for many are invited, but few are chosen. In the context of a wedding, because we'll see something even deeper in this parable that impacts us. In a wedding, in most weddings, there is always 2 parties that agree to get married. In my experience, being an officiant at weddings, you always have to have both bride and groom say yes. Otherwise, the wedding's over. Here's a little hint. You're also the bride. When Jesus is saying this, for many are invited, like clearly the whole world, as the gospel goes out into it, many are invited. We know that. Many are told the gospel. Few are chosen. Or you could extend this and say, few opt in and thus are chosen. Few take the invitation and say, yeah, I'm coming. We were talking about this week a little bit in another conversation, that when the Bible uses the word chosen, it's a two-way street. You've chosen God, and God's chosen you. For the most part, his blessing, his covenant is first for your blessing, for you to receive. But you got to respond. He continues. Large crowds were traveling with Jesus, and turning to them, he said, if anyone comes to me and does not hate their mother, father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, even their own life, such a person cannot be my disciple. This is tough words. Whoever does not carry their cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. Christians for 2,000 years have wrestled with these words. I hate my mom and dad? Hate my wife? What are you saying, Jesus? Well, it goes back to the parable. If you're going to put something as of greater importance or greater value than Jesus, you're missing the point. He's the God of the universe. So there's nothing as important as your relationship with him. And anything you're tempted or I'm tempted to do in life that would surpass our relationship with him means that we're the disciple of that thing, not of Jesus. In the context of what Jesus says, when he even says, come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, for I will give you rest, for my burden is light. Why? Because it's following him as he directs us. But if anything comes in front of our worship of Jesus Christ, we don't qualify anymore to worship him because we've chosen that. That's what he's saying. He's saying it emphatically because the people all around him at that time wanted him to be a great prophet, but they didn't want him to be Messiah. He's going to die for it in just a few days after he says this. I know you may have questions about that. I'm going to keep going and we can speak about this as well. But let's look at it this way. We are in the midst of a dodgeball game. The dodgeball game is set on Earth. But Earth is suspended between two realities. It's suspended between the vineyard of God and what he allows, and that's the rejection of everything that he has. God, our creator, our redeemer, our sustainer, who keeps everything going, is the vineyard owner. All of creation is his. He's the king. There is also, though, a person who is an accuser, a destroyer, a distractor. We call him Lucifer, Beelzebub, demons. He actually puts things into your life that you are tempted to idolize, to worship, so you don't worship God. It's him doing it. So this context that has been created, well, we're in the middle. We're here on earth. But being here on earth, there's an interesting thing going on, and I'll just change this a little bit so you can see better up on the screen. We're running around playing dodgeball on this earth, caught between our creator, redeemer, and sustainer God and the accuser, the destroyer, the distractor, distracting you from life. And we're playing this game. But since the day we were born, we've been tempted in two directions. Good and evil. Three-year-old children that lie. This is going on. We pick. We choose. And we're running around in life, and how we choose or how we've chosen good or evil has actually dictated where we end up. We can end up with God, or we can end up without God. That's the choice we have. We are actually given this incredible choice, a choice that I don't even think I should have, and that's to be with him or without him. He's given us that choice. It's called heaven and hell. Its best definition is that place with God or that place without God. You have a choice. And we're running around on this dodgeball, but it's not just us. Maybe let me go back here a bit. It's not just us. It's also angels that are around us playing dodgeball with us. Good angels and bad angels. Angels and demons, we call them. They're on our dodgeball court, if you will. And on this dodgeball court, we are given balls to throw and catch and dodge. What are them? What are they? Well, we're given life and health and wealth and relationship. We're thrown that ball of life to catch and to share. We're also thrown God's invitation. And if you haven't heard God's invitation before or haven't heard it from a while, I'm inviting you. On behalf of him, as one of his servants, I'm saying, hey, he's inviting you to heaven. Do you want to go or not? You have an invitation. Outstanding invitation to you. The third thing that we pass, opportunities, our family, our money, our wealth, achievements that would tempt us away from worship. There's two extremes. It's pride and it's self-degradation. And as we're thrown these balls of life, thrown the balls that we share on this earth, the two dynamics that we have is this. That which you are called to dodge, according to the Bible. When you see this ball coming at you, you should run from it. Idolatry. Pride. That's thinking that you're as good as God and can direct your own path without him. Good distractions. My parents were talking to a retired couple down in Texas who said it was their lifelong goal to go to every beach they could and collect the shells from that beach so they would have a wonderful shell collection. Does anyone see a problem with spending your whole retirement collecting shells alone? They owned an RV and that was home. Traveled around collecting shells. My dad said, what a waste of life. Shells aren't even worth anything. That's a good distraction. Is it good to collect shells? Well, we all do it. Don't we? You know, we have those things in our bathrooms with the shells on it, right? Maybe little notes of where they came from. Yeah, that's great. But don't spend your whole life, don't take this great investment of your life and say, hey, it's my purpose in life to collect shells. Come on. No deference to those that like shells a lot. If you want to do that, fine. But just realize your life's worth more than just collecting shells. Good distractions. Lying. When the ball of lying has been thrown to you and you know deception, dodge it. When cheating comes your way, someone at work says, oh, well, if we just take this money, this petty cash, and we split it and take it home, dodge that. Dodge sexual immorality. It doesn't end well. We see the brokenness around us. Dodge it. Dodge anger, envy, and rage. And when I thought about this, I realized that anger's not a negative emotion. It's a real emotion that we have. And God, and Jesus had anger. But the word says, in your anger, do not sin. You can be incensed. In fact, you can be zealous about the word of God. And then if you walk up to someone and slap them in their face because they don't believe what you're believing, that's wrong. In your anger, do not sin. But anger is actually not the result of anger, let's say. Dodge that. And here's the thing that you should catch. Here's the things that you should catch and throw. Worship, like what you've come here to do today. Humility. Love. Care for one another. God's given you to do it. You do it as human beings. It's a natural thing that you do. Just keep doing that love and care. Peace. Canada, we have this incredible country that we live in that champions peace. That's awesome. Anytime they have a bill that says we should all have handguns to protect ourselves, I'm against that. I like the peace in our country. Self-control. Truth, justice, joy, goodness. Go to Galatians 5 and you can read a further list of what you're supposed to catch and throw on in life. All this context of us playing dodgeball all throughout history, hope I'm communicating this well enough. You've been in this dodgeball game. You don't get out that often, but you will one day. You will one day. That final ball will hit you and you'll be out. But while we're here, we have ourselves represented here in green and black. And we also have good and bad angels that are around us, because you and I, whether you recognize it or not, there are times in which you are tempted, and it's not by you alone. It's the devil or evil one saying to you, don't think of yourself that way, you're really nothing. Dodge that. When you feel the desire that's not of yourself, why don't you go and connect with Falling Brook Heights Baptist and love the people there? Could be an angel speaking to you. Catch that. Because when we wrestle with these things, the truth is, all of this dodgeball game that we played it up till 4 BC, 30 AD. We played this dodgeball game. You can see it throughout the Bible as you look through all this stuff's going on. John the Baptist, he goes by the Jordan River. He's telling people to repent and to catch good balls and to dodge the bad balls. And guess what happens when King Herod is told that he can't marry his brother's wife? He decapitates John the Baptist. That's a bad dodgeball, by the way. John didn't dodge that one. So until 4 BC and 30 AD, and then something happened. Jesus came. Like God came in human flesh to live amongst us in this context of dodgeball. And he had negative things. He had negative balls, if you will, thrown at him. In fact, his brilliance is that he caught negative balls. You know, like walking amongst lepers. You didn't do that. You could catch leprosy. He interacted with demons and cast them out of people and sent them into pigs. Because what Jesus did and how Jesus changed our world is he's able to catch negative balls and actually turn them into positive ones. Jesus came. And when Jesus came, it tells us in Colossians 1, 15 to 20, if you have your Bibles with you, look up this incredible text, Colossians 1, 15 to 20. Colossians 1, 15 to 20 summarizes this, and this is what it says. Are you ready? The Son starts off like the bridegroom, the guest of honor, is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. In him, all things were created, things in heaven and things on earth, visible and invisible, thrones or powers or rulers, authorities, all angels bow down before Jesus. All things have been created through him and for him. He is before all things. In him, things, in him all things hold together. He is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning and the firstborn from among the dead, so that in everything he might have the supremacy, for God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in Jesus Christ of Nazareth. Whoa. And through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether all things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross. This verse and what Jesus did changes the story that Jesus told. It changes the story because here's the advanced version for you. God is the king. Jesus is his son. And you're actually represented three times in that story. Because yes, you've been invited. You are an invitee. If you've not heard it before today, I'm delivering an invitation that God's inviting you to the great wedding feast of his son. But when you say, I'll accept the invitation, guess what that makes you? A servant to deliver the invitation. You're also a servant, which sometimes, as the story tells us, as Connor told us, sometimes being a servant that delivers invitation can be deadly. Like really deadly. Check in with some of the ministries around the world, and you'll find out that sometimes delivering an invitation gets you killed. You're a servant to deliver the invitation. Sometimes that's not an easy thing to do, especially when people say, no, I'm too busy with my new toy. I'm too busy with my new house. I'm too busy with my new wife. But you're also the bride. Because in the context of Jesus telling the story that God's son is being married, guess who he's being married to? The Bible tells us, you're the bride. I know sometimes that's kind of a weird image for us to have, but we are actually the guest of honor. The church is the guest of honor. His righteousness is on us as the bride, and we're invited to go. We're invited to be it. When the church goes to be with Jesus Christ, that's the wedding feast. Here's what I suggest. From what Connor told us today, what Connor read for us today, accept the invitation. Don't let anything else in your life come between you and this invitation. Like, think about this. Your only son's getting married, and you go to your family and friends and invite them, and they say, nah, I'm busy that Saturday doing, I'm washing the underside of my car. I'm inviting you. I'm paying for the meal. Please come. So the bridegroom's father then says, this is how Jesus is saying how gracious the father is. Okay, fine. The people that are in my community, they don't want to come, so I'll invite someone I don't even know. And not even that, I'll go out to people who are way far away and say, hey, I've got a celebration you can come to. How gracious is God that he invited me to that celebration? It's incredible. So, accept the invitation. Be willing to let God show you how to pass the invitation along to others, because they're invited too. And number three, together we are the church. And together as the church, we are called to catch the blessings that God gives to us. Catch the blessings of love and grace and respect for each other, and to give it to someone else. And dodge that which is dragging down your life. Dodge it.